Evernova is a full stack real estate investment and construction development company. I use the term full stack because you guys are over there in Silicon Valley. I'm pretty sure you know you're pretty familiar with the term. And basically, vertical integration for us is all about creating value for investors. Both of us come from construction backgrounds. We both worked for some of the largest Fortune 500 construction firms in the world. And we saw firsthand the inefficiencies that are there when it comes to developer funded or any project really, but you know, specifically developers at the end of the day, they are doing projects to make money. And many of the large construction companies, the practices they're in, the culture was really not investor focused. So I saw an opportunity to found a company that was based on creating investor value and enhance the vertical integration as much as it is, you know, to drive innovation, to drive efficiencies, you know, to streamline the process. It's, you know, at the end of the day, we want to create better investor value than what they can get elsewhere.
These specific integrations that are a little different than what you had seen done in the past, and how are they actually helping investors?
Right. So for any real estate development project, whether it's a ground up, whether it's, you know, a repositioning value add type of project, there's some construction involved. There's some construction due diligence. There's some pre-construction estimating. There's some, you know, whatever level of tenant improvement that will need to be done on a building to, you know, bring its value back to market or above market price. All that takes a lot of understanding of construction, a lot of pre-construction data analytics, and just knowledge of the construction market. So what we're providing, and you know, especially because most of our projects have been ground up projects, which are much more profitable. Before we start the project, we have a projected budget based on the bidding and our understanding of the construction market and whatnot. And throughout the course of the project, we're going to be providing investors, you know, how we're hitting our milestones based on our projections. So at any point, they're able to tell how we're doing with the project, right? And while at the same time monitoring the market values of the real estate product that we're developing, it's really like being able to track the value of your stock, but you also have a lot of control on what you can do if you think that, you know, either the market is going to go down or, you know, construction overruns and whatnot. Being vertically integrated helps us to control the value creation process from A to Z.
And that's fantastic because a lot of people don't have that kind of background that you have, both as an investor and as a construction person, an engineering person. So that's great. Tell us, you know, a little bit about some of your past successes. And I mean, what gave you the impetus to think you could just, you know, turn a whole industry on its head that's been doing things the same way for years? I mean, what made you know that this was going to work?
Well, in my team, you know, we have architecture engineers, we have civil engineers, we have mechanical engineers, we have MBAs. And I don't mean these are separate people. These are, you know, people who have backgrounds in both fields. So they can talk the construction, they can talk the architecture, they can talk the, you know, the financials. Why did we think we're going to make it work? Well, I worked for one of the largest construction companies in the U.S. And even though, you know, their turnover is on average $4.5 billion a year, having a construction and engineering background, you know, our mindset is all about efficiencies, right? Even if you're still making a profit on a project, if you didn't do it efficiently, that should not make you sleep at night. It's just how engineers are wired. We're all about improving processes and making sure things are as efficient as it can possibly be. All right. So, you know, it takes a little bit of courage to go out there and do something that is different from what everybody else is doing and just think you're going to be successful. But it's also not magic, right? It's really just, you know, knowing the technical aspect of it, understanding the numbers, and understanding the execution and just going out and doing it.
Great. I mean, do you have one project you can point to and specifically that you thought was a home run for you that?
Yeah, so a home run project, the Trayburn project, which I started on. So it was 8 townhomes, a total of, you know, on average, each townhouse was about 2,200 square feet. The opportunity was you know, I say not every developer could have done this project profitably because I acquired the lots very cheaply, but it was also because the lots were very challenging to build on. That's why, you know, this was an already existing subdivision. Part of it was not completed because the developers sort of didn't want to deal with the construction challenges of developing that site. So for me, you know, that was an engineering problem rather than something that is just impossible or something that is untouchable, right? I was like, okay, so we use software to model sites. We make 3D models of sites. We understand, you know, what excavation needs to be done, how much dirt needs to be brought into the site or how much needs to be removed. So being able to understand the metrics of a project before even putting a shovel on the ground, it saves you a lot of money and it saves you a lot of uncertainties that many developers, because also remember, they don't have control of what's happening on the site really. So if they get somebody else to do it for them, most general contractors are going to be like, okay, they're billing you by the hour or by the project. And if you didn't specify the scope of work of what they're supposed to be doing, they'll come back to you and say, you know, this challenging aspect of the site was not part of the contract. It's going to be an additional, you know, $200,000 to get us to do this. And if you don't want to pay, you know, what do? You already have a loan and, you know, you're paying interest on it and you got to finish the project. So you have to pay the contractors. And that's really why most developers don't have a good relationship with general contractors, even though they can't do anything without them, right? So being vertically integrated, basically for us, we don't have anyone to point fingers at. We solve our problems. And that saves investors any headache of having to deal with all those uncertainties, right? And so it was a home run because I was able to solve a lot of the problems that other developers couldn't solve cheaply and created a 16% return.
Wow.
It was roughly, that's annualized return, by the way, is roughly a $2.5 million project, roughly. And, you know, it all completed within a year. You know, investors were happy. And now we're up to, you know, we've got in the next 2 years, currently we have a $12.5 million building that we're acquiring under contract. And then, you know, we have Nova RTP, which its total value, market value for phase one and two is about $25 million. So we're getting a lot of traction with investors. And that's just building up on the initial success.
Wow. It's really intriguing that you were able to do that. I'm kind of curious about this project that we're doing with Neil. First, what actually drew you into the Durham area? What's going on in North Carolina that investors should be aware of that kind of attracted your attention, besides the fact that you went to school around there? Okay, we know that.
Right. Oh, nice. So the Durham area is really, really unique. And, you know, it's not just because I went to school here. Actually, I was recently in Dallas, and I studied the characteristics of the Dallas-Fort Worth real estate market. To me, it seemed like a blown-out version of what's happening in Durham, in the Triangle market right now. It's driven by individual factors that the sum of which is a very powerful economic machine, and it's very sustainable, and that is intellectual asset. According to a UC Berkeley researcher's book, it's called The New Geography of Jobs, Durham has been ranked as one of the most, Durham and the Triangle in general, so Raleigh, Morrisville, it's called, you know, the RTP market. It's been ranked as one of the markets that have the highest educated population in the U.S., so about 50% of the workforce in the Triangle have education, like a bachelor's degree or higher, right? So it's a very sustainable mechanism of driving an economy as opposed to an oil town like South Dakota, oil market like South Dakota, or an auto industry driven market like Detroit. And you can see what's happening to those markets right now when those industries suffer, right? So what's happening in the Triangle is, you know, it's a sustainable, there's the biotech companies, there's, you know, research, there's great universities like Duke, like UNC, NC State, that are driving the intellectual resources there. And, you know, you have a lot of people moving into the area. It's also affordable than New York and California, where most of those companies are. So we're seeing companies like, I think, Merck they're moving about 300 jobs from Boston to here. And the average job is going to be, you know, $110,000, I think, in salary.
Wow.
It's a very sustainable market. You know, it's being driven by innovation, by technology. There's not much of a finance industry here, so we don't have a whole lot of banks that are moving their headquarters here, but it's also not known for that. But I think the presence of universities is really driving, it's making those companies, you know, think of this place as very attractive.
Yeah, and it's also a beautiful area. I mean, I got to add, it's a beautiful part of the world with a lot of things for people to do once they're there.
Right.
So
right.
I think that's important. So on the housing side of it, so you're going to see a need, if you were guessing how far into the future people were going to be needing affordably priced housing with amenities, which is kind of what people in that age group want, how many years would you say this trend could go on? I mean, barring a total meltdown of the entire financial universe, okay? But
right. So let's put it in context. According to the city of Durham right now, there's a shortage of 66,000 residential units just in Durham alone. To put that in perspective, the largest home builders in the country, you know, you're talking about the Meritage, the Lennar and all those big dogs, they probably, on a combined sum, they probably build between 40 to 45,000 homes a year, right? So, you know, 66,000 shortage of residential units in a small market in just one city like Durham is enormous. And so far, we don't see any sign of the demand being fulfilled. And, you know, now that the Fed has knocked down the rates, we think that a lot more people are going to be transitioning from renters to buyers. And the statistics are, there's 20 people moving in Durham every single day. There's an average of 120 people moving in the Triangle area every single day. So, you know, you have a mix, obviously, of high-tech professionals. You know, people are going to be making those, you know, six-figure salaries. And then, you know, you have people who are sort of in the mid-tier. And all those work together. According to the new geography of jobs, one software engineering job creates five other different jobs that are related to the spending of that one person, right? So I think it's a very sustainable economy. And whether we're going to see a slowdown in the market, I don't think, you know, in the next 5 years, because it's different from markets like Dallas, where you have a lot of the large developers who are putting in, you know, billions of dollars and just like throwing in money. I think we're kind of under the radar right now. And, you know, we hope that, you know, stays like that. But I don't see any slowdown.
Can you explain a little bit about the mindset that went behind putting this together and why you opted not to have a loan?
It's a combination of factors. So one is there are other ways of leveraging resources to complete a ground up project besides taking a bank loan. So I give you an example. For most of what we do on a ground up project is getting materials shipped to a site and, you know, hiring the subcontractors to do the different trades. So you're basically taking material from a warehouse and moving it to your site, right? That process itself is a very, you know, it's just like moving the items from place A to place B. Now, does that mean you necessarily need a loan to just move material from somebody's warehouse to your job site? There are business lines of credit, right? So we have good relationships with our material suppliers. And because we don't have debt, they're willing to extend business lines of credit than they would to an average debt-funded project, because they know, first of all, they'll be in the first position in case of any claims, right? Because there's no senior debt on it. So that gives them a lot of comfort. And it's also just really built on the relationships that we have. So I think leveraging relationships to avoid debt risk is a much smarter move in a market like right now, where, you know, you have a lot of tariffs and trade wars between the U.S. and China. Those kind of uncertainties, if we can eliminate those uncertainties by leveraging other resources to bring our product to the market, we think that is a prudent thing to do. We don't have anything against debt, but we think that at this time of the economy, with the need that we're trying to solve, this is the best way to do it.
What's the benefits of not having a bank loan? I mean, what do you tell them when they say, I don't understand this, you know, I've never seen this before, how does it work?
You're right. Some people, you know, are traditional, and if they see something they haven't, you know, heard about before or done it or been involved in before, it's normal. I think it's a normal human response. But, you know, what we tell them is, you know, first of all, the returns that we're delivering are comparable better than projects that have debt. So if you can get a risk-adjusted return that, you know, has absolutely 0% chance of going under because of any debt risk in a market where right now Wall Street is doing much worse than Main Street, right? People have lower rates. They can, you know, afford mortgages. Jobs are doing well in the U.S. I think it's one of, you know, we're doing really well. If you look at the data, we have more job openings than there are job seekers in the U.S. right now. Salaries have risen at least 4% in the last year. You know, about 300,000 people entered the job market in the last year. So Main Street is doing well, but Wall Street is not doing well. And I think that's a good thing because, you know, when Main Street is doing well, if you're able to finish your project, you're going to sell it. Whereas if Wall Street is not doing well, you know, if you have a construction loan, the banks are likely to freeze it if they don't feel too confident about the economy. And that's what happened in 2008. You know, people were able to finish their projects. They were able to sell it. You know, of the about 7 million homes that were being sold a year, it dropped to 4.5 million homes. But, you know, those who were able to complete their projects, they were able to sell it. If you get a CO, you're able to close on your pre-sale contract or whatever. So I think it's really looking at the bigger picture and seeing that, you know, you're getting a risk-adjusted return that is strong and you have no debt risk. If you can sleep at night and have money in your pockets, what more do you want?
The other thing I was kind of wondering is, do people ever think that for some reason they're not going to get the same kind of returns that they get with a bank? I mean, is that ever a concern? That
most people invest in traditional developers, sort of sponsored types of deals. We're a vertically integrated sponsor. So we have a lot of control in the whole value creation process. You know, for a developer, I agree. Why, you know, there's a reason why they lever up deals. It's not because it's expensive to build or you can't create a return if you don't have debt, but it's also because there's so many layers in between. You're paying a general contracting company that charges you on rate that you have no control of, right? And they get their fee based on the construction costs. So what incentive do they have to make the construction costs low, right? It's a traditional chain that, you know, has been there for years. Most developers have to use leverage in order to have any margin in that chain. You know, you have commissions, you have, you know, real estate agent commissions, you have construction, you have so many people in between who are involved, right? So we just think that, you know, people will have to see us for who we are, and we're here to prove our value. Well, I think a good analogy of what we are is more of like the auto industry, right? There are people, there are companies, or let's look at it in terms of people, right? There are people who decide to be the largest auto dealers in the nation, and you have a lot of companies like that. And then you have, you know, people like Elon Musk who want to, you know, actually produce the vehicles, right? So the process of, you know, those are two, you're solving two different problems. We are going out there to build real estate based on feedback that we're getting from our investors, customizing our designs and you know, and models based on user feedback and experience. Whereas, you know, for developers, because they're not controlling that entire chain, right? They, for them, it's about, you know, what's the margin for this product, right? But for us, it's like, how can we design the same product, use much more efficient designs to build it for cheaper, right? So I think you know, we have a lot more engineering approach into developing real estate. And in that, we're seeing margins that a developer would not see because they're not involved in the process.